This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiaoyi. Today is our open clinic show. It's Ask a Doctor. Well, today we don't have a doctor on the show. We have a clinical optometrist, Vinodini Naidu. And we want to discuss, in conjunction with World Sight Day, we want to discuss about low vision problems. And she'll be able to answer questions that you have about low vision and some other general vision related issues that you have as well. So as with all our open clinic segments, do call us. Our phone lines are open 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. How are you today, Vinod?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you?
Very well. Thank you so much for, sharing your time and, some thoughts with us today. Now, I mentioned that today is World Sight Day. And just for the benefit of those listening, did you know that nearly everyone on the planet will experience an eye health issue in their lifetime? And more than 1 billion people worldwide do not have access to eye care services. Now, this year's theme for World Sight Day is hashtag Love Your Eyes. It's all about being aware of your own eye health, and if you are able to get a sight test or recommend others to do the same. It's quite simple, really, to get a sight test and really to be aware of what changes in your vision mean. And that's what I hope to get into today. We want to sort of narrow the discussion. Vision sight is such a huge topic. We wanted to narrow in on low vision, something that I think we don't get a chance to discuss very much. So perhaps, Vino, if you could just give us a primer, what exactly do we mean by low vision?
Low vision is actually vision impairment that can't be corrected with normal spectacles, contact lenses, or even surgical intervention. It is actually a loss of visual function which impacts basic daily living activities. So low vision actually differs from total blindness. Like when a person is blind, they're actually able to see light perception, or they are living in darkness, like no vision at all. Whereas in low vision, they do have certain vision. So they still can move around and they're able to do their daily activities. According to World Health Organization, there are around 246 million people who are low vision and 36 million people who are blind. And 90% of them are from developing countries. And they are more common among the rural community as they don't have access to the eye care professions.
Do we know how common low vision is here in Malaysia?
In Malaysia, if among the rural community, it's common. As you see, even a basic cataract surgery, they don't have access to cataract surgeries. Mm-hmm. And actually, like our older generation, they think cataract surgery is not necessary.
Right. So, okay, you've mentioned cataracts. Is that one of the causes for low vision?
Yep, cataract is one of the causes, and it is a reversible cause of low vision.
Oh, okay. Could you elaborate more on what does lead to low vision among people?
Okay, besides cataract, even like now it's common in Malaysia is ARMD, which is age-related macular degeneration, and glaucoma, and also diabetic retinopathy. As we know, there's a lot of diabetic patients in our country. So diabetic retinopathy is a leading cause of low vision in our country. And among children, there are congenital conditions like retinitis pigmentosa, Stargardt disease, or even retinopathy of prematurity.
Are those conditions that they are born with?
Yeah, those congenital conditions are conditions they are born with.
All right. Might there be any situations where trauma happens, some sort of accident or injury that would lead to low vision?
Yeah, so any trauma or brain injury can cause low vision. That is when they have sudden loss of vision. So they will require like rehabilitation for them to be able to be independent.
All right. Okay. So I asked earlier about, how common is low vision in Malaysia? And if we look at the causes that you've mentioned, cataract, age-related macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, and you said yourself, so many people have diabetes in Malaysia. In terms of the people that you see, the patients or the clients that you see or have seen in your experience, I just want to get a picture of profile, who they are, at what age do you typically see them, how bad is the problem by the time you've seen them?
From my experience, I've been seeing a lot of either their elderly generation or the younger ones, like babies. So among the elderly population, those above 45 is common, and it is even more common among those who are 75 because due to degenerative diseases. And those babies who are born premature, they are at risk of retinopathy or prematurity. That's why we advise those premature babies to have the eyes cleaned at birth so that we can catch it in the earlier stage and we can start doing some treatment for them.
All right. So, you know, could you describe what low vision, I was going to say looks like, but no, what low vision is like? You know, what are the symptoms? How would my vision change if I have this condition?
Okay, good one. So let's say you have low vision. So first thing, maybe you can have like central loss of vision, whereas your central vision, let's say you're looking at someone's face, you may not be able to see their eyes, their nose or their mouth sharply. You may feel like there's a patch, either a white patch, a grayish patch or a black patch on their face. And besides that, even loss of peripheral vision, whereas like, let's say when you are looking straight, you're able to see around 180 degrees, but you might have constricted field of vision that maybe you might be only be able to see around 30 degrees or 40 degrees. And besides that, blurring of vision, which are not corrected with glasses. Let's say you wear spectacles or you wear contact lenses, the blurring of vision can't be corrected. And also hazy vision, like you feel a layer in front of your eyes, like as though you're looking through a cloud or looking through water. And night blindness, where in a dark or a dim area, you're not able to see things or not able to move around, especially at home at night when the lights are switched off, you can't move around. And some people even have light sensitivity. So when they go out in the sunlight or when there's too much of light, they feel very glare. Glaring is an issue for them. So besides that, like some early signs are like when, let's say when you are taking something to read and then even wearing spectacle, you are not able to read. You just can see there are words there, but you're not able to read that. And when you look far, when you look at any object away with your glasses, you're not able to see the object. You know something exists there, but you can't see it sharply. And also like sometimes you have differentiation in color. Like when you look at your house wall, let's say today it's green color. Over the years, you may see it maybe suddenly becoming a dimmer color or it becomes towards grayish. That means you're losing your contrast and also the color sensitivity.
All right. I want to come back just very briefly to the loss of peripheral vision. And you mentioned you lose certain degrees, but that may be hard for people to relate to. So if I were to take the example of looking at a TV screen or a computer screen, you know, How would that change for me?
Okay, actually, loss of peripheral vision is very common in glaucoma. That's why we always tell that glaucoma is a silent killer because you never know that you're losing your peripheral vision until it becomes a tunnel vision. So that's when it's too late that you go and seek treatment. So that's why we always advise people to get it screened. Even at home, if you want, you can actually check on your own. Let's say today you just look straight and you'll be able to see, like, let's say you're looking straight at your monitor. As you look at your monitor, I'm sure you'll be able to see if there's a desk on your right-hand side, on the left-hand side. Then as you can monitor it, maybe every week you can check and see whether is your vision getting lesser or it's just the same. If suddenly someday you see, I can't see the desk on my right-hand side, that means you are losing your peripheral vision.
Mm. And I can imagine it's something that it creeps up on you so gradually that you don't realize. But is there a point, is there an optimal window when people should go and seek help and beyond that it would become too late?
Actually, as we would advise, annual screening is very, very important so that we pick up anything in the early stage. Because like in a condition like glaucoma, we can't tell you, like, because sometimes you yourself won't know, like, whether you're losing your peripheral vision or not. So sometimes when you know it, it's already too late, because you might have just a tunnel vision. So it's too late for you to get any treatment. So that's why the only way is to avoid all this is go and see your optometrist, get an annual assessment.
Is there any difference between seeing an optometrist or an eye specialist?
Actually, nowadays, optometrists do primary eye care too. They do assess your, besides just giving you spectacles, they actually assess whether you have any eye conditions or not. Because most optometrists are now becoming a primary eye care. So you can actually see them, and if they find any pathological conditions, they will refer you to an ophthalmologist.
All right. I'm speaking today to Vinodini Naidu, clinical optometrist, and we are commemorating World Sight Day today with an open clinic segment on low vision problems. So this is your chance to ask questions. If you have been, struggling with vision or sight problems, if you think you have low vision, if you fall into the groups that we've talked about, you know, you are older, you may have cataracts, age-related macular degeneration, if you have diabetes or perhaps high blood pressure, and these are conditions that increase your risk of glaucoma and diabetic retinopathy, do get your questions in. You can call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 if you need some guidance and some general advice. We'll be right back after this quick break on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik, and my guest, Vinodini Naidu, clinical optometrist. We're commemorating World Sight Day today, and it is our open clinic segment, and you can call in or WhatsApp in with your questions for Vinod. And we're discussing low vision today, but if you have general vision questions, do call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, before the break, we discussed, what are the different types of low vision, how it affects different areas, I suppose, of your sight. And, you know, you have central vision loss, you have peripheral, you can have blurred vision, you can also have hazy vision. And we've tried to emphasize already that these are common. And you, especially when you have risk factors, like you have cataracts, you are of older age and may have age-related macular degeneration. If you have diabetes, for instance, you should be going for annual eye checks with an optometrist. And I think I just want to explore that a little bit more and help people to understand that this is not something that you want to take for granted, brush off, or just wait. You know, before we talked about doing this show, you gave me some examples about how low vision impacts people's daily lives, and we want to really look at it in terms of things that their daily routines and activities. Perhaps you could give some examples.
Okay, for example, if maybe I would say when you go to the mall and suddenly someone actually bumps into you, but actually he's not bumping in you accidentally, he's not able to see. He's, for example, in his case, he might have a loss of peripheral vision, so therefore he can't see you walking in the opposite direction, therefore he bumps into you. So that means don't just stare at him. It's actually, it might not be his fault, he actually can't see. Or even when you go to any restaurant, someone takes out like a magnifier and starts reading the menu because they actually can't see, so they need a magnifier to read the menu. So I think we shouldn't like keep staring at the person and making them feel uneasy. So we should like, okay, that's another norm in the community. Like a person can't see and he's using the magnifier. So nothing wrong with that. Mm.
Is there a stigma when it comes to people who have vision problems, perhaps need these kinds of devices?
Yeah, I actually have most of my patients actually will require magnifiers, like especially for their near vision. for them to be able to read, even though maybe the headlines of a newspaper, some of them are not able to read. So they may need a magnifier to read the headlines of a newspaper.
Mm. We'll go a little bit more into these kinds of devices or aids in a while. But how about children, Vinod? And how does it affect things like schooling, learning, playing even?
As for children, actually children, they grow up mostly by using their visual modalities for their learning purpose. So in children, like once they're diagnosed with a visual impairment, their development, their learning behavior, or even daily living skills, social interactions are all affected. So, and their growth is actually not normal. Their milestones may not be normal as a normal child. There will be a delay in milestone. And children's abilities need to be assessed based on the developmental level and not their age. And those, actually, children with visual impairment, they may have behaviors like eye rubbing, irritability, and then they even bang their head on either the wall or any toys, or they like to poke their eyes. And then the light gazing, like they search where can they find for light, or even body rocking. So that is some of the symptoms in a child. And when they want, let's say in a grown-up child, when he's a school-going person, so when he goes to school, he might not be able to see the blackboard or the whiteboard. So he may need some rehabilitation like telescopes. So using a telescope for a child is not going to be easy also, because he needs to get adapted to the telescope. So we will need to teach him on how to use the telescope. And then for him to read his textbooks, he may need a magnifier. So besides that, some of them may not be able to go outdoor and play because the sunlight may be an issue for them. So some children can cope with sunglasses. Some may not be able to use sunglasses because the glare is too much for them. So they may be more of an indoor person. So as indoor games, you can get the board games and play with them. They actually may need like bigger print board games. You can buy those board games with bigger print. And even dice, like normal dice, they can't see. So they will need those big dice, quite big, I mean by really huge dice, so that it's easy for them to play.
Goodness, so many things I think I had taken for granted and I hadn't realized they would be such a challenge. So you've mentioned the use of perhaps telescopes, magnifiers, and I presume these are sort of aids, right? Assistive devices that help people to be able to carry out their daily routines. Because like you said, low vision can't be sort of, corrected with glasses, contact lenses or surgery. So it's about learning to live with it and to adapt to it. Is that right?
Yep, you're right.
All right. So can you give us, elaborate more on these assistive devices and how they would help?
So actually assistive devices, they are optical and non-optical. They are also like electrical magnifiers. So first, let me chat with the optical part of it. Optical part, you actually can have telescopes and then high-powered lenses. I'm sure like you would have seen some of them wearing spectacles which looks like fisheye impact. You know, when you look at their eye, they look like a fisheye. Actually, that is very high-powered lenses. And then telescopes are those like telescopes which we use to see for distance vision, and magnifiers are for near vision. So there are like video magnifiers where you can use for intermediate distance and near distance. And let's say like how do you use a telescope? I'll take an example of a telescope. So the first thing when we give a telescope, we will make the patient to identify objects. Like let's say we write a word in front, hi, how are you? So they need to find where is hi and then move to the next word, how are you? And then we need to slowly track to go to the next line. So that process of, you know, adapting to it takes some time. Whereas with handheld magnifiers, so some of them are illuminated once though you have light built in the magnifiers. So for those magnifiers, we need to see which is the correct magnification for the patient, because every patient has different visual impairment. So the magnification depends on the patient's visual impairment. And as of non-optical devices, you can have like large print books, especially those school-going children. You can actually get like books which are bigger prints, like the normal school books, you can make it into a bigger print. And then even their exercise books, those single line books, they won't be able to see because the lines are very dull for them. So you can actually buy those exercise books with bold lines, which is easier for them to see. And they can't use normal 2B pencil. They will be required to use like bold tip pens so that it gives a better contrast when they are writing. And besides that, they will require extra illumination, like maybe a reading lamp. So the reading lamp also differs because some people they might require yellow color light. Some people might need white color light. Some may need a natural light. So it depends on individual's condition also. And we advise reading stand because when you use a magnifier, you can't be bending down and reading. So with a reading stand, you can elevate your reading material so you can see, use the magnifier comfortably. So you won't have your neck pain and all that. And filters. So some people with different conditions can wear different color filters. You know, filters are like those sunglasses. You can get attachment form. You can get those wrap around form. So it depends on what is your comfort. And also nowadays we have a lot of apps in our phone, and our phone is built in with assistive devices. We can actually go use our phone and you can actually change the contrast. Like some of us may prefer black and white or black background with white writing because the contrast improves. And you can even magnify your writing in your phone. And besides that, most phones are built in with magnifiers. Yes. I'm sure many people don't know about this, but most phones are built in with magnifiers. So this is a very good thing because let's say when you go to the mall and you want to see how much is the price of, let's say, a jam bottle. So you can just take your phone, use the magnifier, and you can see how much is the jam bottle. Or another option is just take a picture of it and then you can zoom in and see what's the price of it or even the ingredients on a food item.
I think that's what a lot of people have been doing, taking a picture and zooming in. Coincidentally, I recently found out about my phone's magnifier function because my son stumbled upon it. But there's so much to consider and to plan for and to know what suits you as an individual. Is that something an optometrist will help each person to manage?
Actually, not all optometrists know how to manage a low vision patient. It depends if the person has specialized in low vision, then they will know how to manage a low vision patient because every individual differs and not one device is for everything. Now, maybe an individual may require 2 to 3 devices. So it depends on the patient's need. Like some people may not need any correction for distance because they feel they don't really need like to see so far away. They may only need for reading. And some people may think, oh, I feel difficult in cooking, like cutting vegetables and cutting fruits. So it differs on the person's need.
Of course, yes. Are these devices expensive? Is there any support that people can use to perhaps get financial assistance?
Yeah, so once you are labeled as a visually impaired person or a low vision person, you are entitled for disability certificate, which is OKU in our country. And you can also get welfare support from the government. So you can actually write into the Kebajikan and request for welfare. You get, I'm not sure how much monthly, you do get some welfare from the government. Besides that, in government hospitals, they do have low vision clinics. Not all government hospitals, some hospitals do have. And they do give free magnifiers in the government hospitals. Once you go to the low vision clinic, accordingly, they will give you the magnifier. And also, Malaysian Association of the Blind, they also do have, like, they do give magnifiers for free. And also, they have skill training programs for those who are visually impaired. So there are a lot of options, actually, for those visually impaired.
All right. You know, we'll go for a quick break after this and come back and talk about, you know, you've mentioned about skills training. I just want to find out if there is any other, you know, aspects of treatment or management, so to speak, for people living with low vision, and just a little bit about helping, I guess, understanding that this is a difficult journey forward emotionally, right? There are lots of things that you won't be able to do anymore, and not to dismiss those kinds of issues as well. But this is an open clinic segment, and we are welcoming questions about low vision or other sight issues. So we do have a question here from a listener who says they have dry eyes. I'm currently using a lotion. They've sent me a picture of it. It's an emulsion, a single dose. I won't say the brand name, but the question here is actually, is there a cure for dry eyes?
As for dry eyes, we wouldn't say there is a cure, because you may need to use like artificial tears continuously to lubricate your eyes. And dry eyes is common because we all of us work in air-conditioned environment. And even though we are at home, we switch on the air condition. So that makes our eyes dry. Besides that, even aging is an issue in dry eyes, because our tears tend to reduce as we age. So I would advise like you go and get a consultation from a specialist. And also you can continue using artificial tears, because that's the best solution, I would say.
All right. You mentioned about being in air-conditioned rooms. Somebody recently asked whether using a humidifier would help.
Yes, actually, we do recommend using a humidifier for some patients who have very severe dry eyes. And, you know, you can't avoid not being in the air condition. Mm. So we do advise those patients with severe dry eyes to use a humidifier.
All right. So keep those questions coming in. You can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. It's World Sight Day today, so we are discussing low vision problems. If you have any questions in that area or generally about vision, please do bring them in to us. I'm speaking today to Vinodini Naidu, clinical optometrist. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. My guest joining me on Zoom, Vinodini Naidu, clinical optometrist. It's World Sight Day today, and our open clinic segment today is looking at low vision as well as other vision-related issues. So get your questions in. You can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a question here from John. Can a person get glaucoma and macular degeneration at the same time?
Yes, it's possible to get both at the same time. I mean, not at the same time. Maybe you might have one of it first. So it depends which one comes first.
All right. Maybe you just want to briefly explain for each of them, which parts of the eyes are they affecting?
Like, for glaucoma, actually your optic nerve is affected, because how your optic nerves get affected in glaucoma is when there's increase in eye pressure, so the pressure presses on your optic nerve. So therefore, that's what causes you to have visual problem. And in age-related macular degeneration, there's degeneration in your retina. Retina is actually like the film in your eye. So once there's degeneration in it, so as how if there's problem in the film, so you won't be able to see after that. So that's why you have visual impairment in macular degeneration.
So would it be recommended for older adults, once they reach a certain age, to be going for eye checks regularly?
Actually, for those who are 45 and above, they're recommended to go for annual eye check. They actually, either you can go and see an optometrist who is a primary eye care, or you can see an ophthalmologist also.
All right, 45 and above. And speaking of going for regular eye checks, another question here. So she has mild astigmatism and has prescription glasses for it, but often forgets to wear them and then gets headaches after looking at a screen for too long. Is it because she's not wearing her glasses? Is it going to make the astigmatism worse? And does she need to see her optometrist regularly?
Okay, in her condition, because she's not wearing her glasses, so she's actually straining her eyes. That's the reason why she's having headache. So I would advise her to continuously wear your glasses. I know your vision is good, but the glasses is actually allowing you not to strain your eyes. So since you keep like forgetting to wear your glasses, better to just keep on wearing it to avoid you having eye strains and headache. And if you keep straining your eyes, it can increase your prescription. So the reason why, like some people think like, no, I shouldn't wear my glasses often. My vision will get better if I don't wear my glasses. But that is wrong. You should actually wear your glasses to avoid eye strain. And that's where so that your prescription doesn't keep on increasing.
And does she need to see an optometrist regularly?
Yep. For her, it depends on her age. If she's a young adult, I would say you don't really need, you can go like twice a year to see an optometrist.
All right. Well, we have the questions coming in fast and furious now. We have a 64-year-old who has mild to moderate glaucoma in both eyes, wears spectacles, has been prescribed eye drops to lower the pressure in the eyeballs below 22. After 6 months of using the eye drops, the pressure has dropped to 11 and 15 respectively. I presume this means either side of the eyes. I think his question is, does he need to continue with the eye drops?
As in glaucoma, you may need to use eye drops like for lifelong in certain patients because to prevent your eye pressure from increasing. So I think it's based on what your doctor has advised you because your doctor is the one following up you. So better follow what your doctor has advised you.
All right, all right. Will surgery be necessary at some point for people with glaucoma? Is his other question.
It depends on the condition. If your eye pressure is maintained and there's no nerve thinning, like, you know, your eye looks stable, so there's no necessity of surgery. Surgery is only necessary when the eye pressure is very high and then even with eye drops, the pressure is not reducing. So that's when surgery is required.
All right. So the best advice really is to follow up with your ophthalmologist, your eye specialist, to find out what's best for your situation. Another listener, 69 years old, has cataracts. His sight is good but can't read fine print unless he uses a magnifying glass. Has been suggested to have surgery. So he's wondering, is it really necessary?
Actually, for those with cataract, and you once you do your cataract surgery, you will feel like you're in a total new world because everything will look brighter and you will be back to your normal self. So cataract is one of the reasons of visual impairment in our country, and it's actually a reversible visual impairment. So once you do your cataract surgery, you're back to your normal lifestyle. So I would advise you to go on and do your cataract surgery. Maybe. It's not necessary nowadays, like you need to wait for your cataract to really mature and all that. Once it's very mature, during surgery, you can have complications. So nowadays, once you have feel like your daily activities are impaired, we advise you to do cataract surgery.
It will progress, won't it?
Yes, cataract can progress.
And I know a lot of people have this fear. Perhaps you could allay their fears about the surgery.
Yeah, even my own family member, I have someone who didn't want to do his cataract surgery because he thinks, why should we do any surgical intervention when he still can see? But I managed to convince him and make him to do his cataract surgery. And today he's asking me when can he do his next eye. So that much of difference a cataract surgery actually makes.
So the point is, even though you feel that it's mild impairment, now is the time to do it because it's going to progress. And then when it gets more complex or when it gets more mature, the surgery becomes more complex.
Yes, you're right.
All right. We have a caller on the line. Paul has a question. Hi, good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon. Hi, Xiaowei, and hello, guest. Hello, speaker.
Hi.
Hi, by the way, I've had cataract done in both my eyes, and they are lovely, brilliant stuff.
Okay, well done, Paul.
Those days I thought white was white, but it was yellowish. And when I got cataract done, I know what white really is now. It's amazing. The question I have is, I know a lot of people who go to opticians, and opticians practice some kind of optometry, and they start measuring and doing all the work that you do as an expert. So I think people need to know the difference between optician, optometrist, and ophthalmologist. I leave it to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Paul. So the difference between optician, optometrist, and an ophthalmologist.
Okay, opticians are actually those who check your eye power and they prescribe glasses for you. And optometrists are those who actually can do, actually contact lens shouldn't be sold over the counters. You need to do an assessment before you get a contact lens because certain people have certain requirement for contact lenses. And so it's better to get yourself assessed before you get a pair of contact lenses. Whereas optometrists do that. They do assessment before you get a pair of contact lenses. And also optometrists can assess any pathological conditions you have. They can actually check the surface of your eye, the front surface of your eyes, like your cornea, whether you have any corneal problem, like keratoconus. Optometrists can manage a keratoconus. Keratoconus means like your cornea shape is not normal. It actually looks like a rugby ball. So they can actually prescribe like special contact lenses for keratoconus cases. And also optometrists can also check your retina because nowadays they have a slit lamp in most optometry outlet. So they actually do a full eye examination for you. Some even have like, you can check your eye pressure in the optometry outlet. You can even check like your retina. They have this fundus photo where you can take a photo of your retina. They can show you whether you have any diabetic retinopathy, age-related macular degeneration. And some optometry practice even have like a OCT machine, which is where you can check on the layers of your retina, any defect on the layers of your retina. And an ophthalmologist is who completes a medical degree and then they specialize in the eyes. So they are known as an ophthalmologist. So they do surgical interventions. And in ophthalmology, they have so many parts also. Like how in optometry, we have the different parts. They too have like cornea specialists. They have retina specialists, pediatric specialists. So these are the difference between the three segments. And mostly now, all the optical outlets, we are trying to make it into a primary eye care center managed by optometrists.
Which is a brilliant idea, right? And that makes it so much easier for people to access eye care, you know, without having to go to tertiary care centers. Our listener Krish has texted in to add one more term, orthoptist. And he's talking about it in relation to his mother's strabismus problem.
Okay, orthoptist is a person who actually does those with squint. So let's say if you have squint, sometimes squint doesn't need to be managed through surgical intervention. You can manage with actually like special lenses called prism lenses where it can correct your squint. And sometimes like by giving certain prescriptions, you can correct your squint can improve. And they even give vision therapy where like certain exercises for your eyes to improve the squint in your eyes.
Mm.
So orthoptist is a person who manages more on squint and binocular vision.
I see. And related to cataracts, again, a listener's question is, after cataract surgery on one side, not on one side, after cataract surgery, would you need to do another surgery again years later when your sight deteriorates?
Usually after cataract surgery, you wouldn't require to do a surgery later on, but you may require to do a laser procedure, which is a very fast laser procedure. It is to prevent there's a growth, there'll be a layer growing over your lens. So with the laser procedure, they actually will remove that layer which grows over your lens.
All right. We have Elvin who says, Elvin is 36, has been blessed with 20/20 vision so far. Well done, Elvin. With mild astigmatism, But recently, due to working from home and spending a lot more time on the screens, he has experienced just twice in very quick succession. And he doesn't, he's trying to describe it by using an analogy here where if you were to look directly at the sun and then you close your eyes, you see a light spot. And that's what he's experienced twice, but it's sort of reduced since he lowered the brightness of his screen. So he's wondering, is that something he needs to be concerned about?
I'm not sure actually what is he meaning. I think it might be flashes of light. I'm not sure whether that's the term he's trying to tell. Flashes of light in the sense you see like I saw a camera flash like that at your eyes, like very bright light. So I would say that if it's a flashes of light, he will need to see an ophthalmologist to get his retina assessed because it can be a retinal issue.
Can he see an optometrist first as a first step and then get advice from there?
He can see an optometrist depending if they have if they can check his retina because some optometrists don't have a fundus camera to assess the retina. So because in his condition, I would he would require to dilate his eyes and get his retina assessed properly. Mm. So if for dilation in our country, only the ophthalmologist can do dilation.
Mm, okay.
The optometrists are not allowed to do dilation.
All right. So best bet to see an eye specialist, an ophthalmologist. Just very quickly, I just wanted to touch on, you know, just getting more impact on low vision problems, which is that how it affects someone, I guess, emotionally and psychologically, losing the ability to do things that you previously had enjoyed. And I've heard stories about people who loved playing music and are unable to do so after that because they can't read the sheets, right? I guess it's something that they have to manage, but perhaps some guidance from you in terms of how to ensure that, you know, they don't run the risk of going into depression or anything like that.
Yeah, actually, when a person has low vision, they are affected with depression and anxiety. So that's why, like, we don't want a person to go through depression and anxiety. That's the reason why we want them to go for rehabilitation so that they can continue their daily activities as before. Like how you said, like a musician won't be able to see the notes, especially if you are playing a piano. I'm very sure you won't be able to see your notes in front of you, even though it's quite near. So one of the options, it's like we will ask them to have a larger print of their notes and with extra illumination for them. Or we even can have a magnified version. Like you can put a magnifier. Nowadays, you have stand magnifiers where you can just put your notes there and then put the stand magnifier above your notes so you will be able to see your notes and play, I mean, continue your music journey.
Mm.
And also, like in old people, especially old people, like, you know, they love to read newspapers. People do, the elderly generation still buy newspapers and read newspapers. So when they are not able to read newspaper, this is a big problem for them. Like I've been having a few patients who complain. Main complaint, I can't read newspaper. So for them, you can actually do what a magnifier will help them with extra illumination and they'll be able to read the newspaper. So just some simple things which can improve their lifestyle.
All right.
Like even when you eat, sometimes like you miss out certain portions. So we will advise the family members on where to position the plate so that they don't miss the food portions.
All right. One last question from a listener. What is presbyopia and at what age does it begin?
Okay, presbyopia is actually like you will have reading problem. So, you know, that's when you require reading glasses.
So is that is that the near vision that's affected?
Yeah, their near vision is affected. So, you know, like, mostly people at presbyopia 40 and above, but let's say you are a myopic person, that means you are short-sighted, you may get presbyopia maybe at around 43 and above because your short-sighted may compensate for your presbyopia at your early age. So when a person has presbyopia, we will advise them to use reading glasses. And some people, you can see, they wouldn't want to wear their reading glasses and they hold the reading material further. Like they keep pushing their hand further and further away to read their reading material. Actually, with a pair of glasses, they will be able to read their reading material as normal.
All right. Okay. Just a final message from you, Vinod. Perhaps a takeaway for people on being more aware of low vision and just general eye health.
Okay. Currently I'm working with the healthcare providers and optometrists to create more awareness on low vision and rehabilitation, as they are the gateway for the public to know more about low vision. And I would request all eye care practitioners to refer your patients once they meet the low vision criteria. And also you can get to know any low vision practitioners near your practice. And besides that, we need to start promoting the awareness of low vision. And as a society, we need to have the acceptance of a low vision person, not like staring at them and making them feel uneasy. So once we as a community have acceptance to them, and then at least they will feel comfortable, like they can start moving around like as independently. And God forbid, this can creep up on us anytime, as there can be possibilities of us becoming a low vision patient. So we don't want to feel excluded at that point of time. So I would say the future remains more optimistic as we work together as a society to accept those visually impaired and allow them to live a normal lifestyle.
All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Vinodini Naidu, clinical optometrist, for our Open Clinic segment today in conjunction with World Sight Day. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.